EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. See, I passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello everyone and welcome to the show. How are you all doing? I'm Nick Hunter and you're listening to the UFO Chronicles podcast. Sloan from Idaho will be starting us off this episode with an encounter from 2004 of a Paraguayan cryptid called Pombero. At the time, Sloan was serving as a missionary for the LDS Church in Paraguay. And then we visit Montana to hear about Joel's UFO encounter back in the early 1980s while he was on a family camping trip by the James River in Virginia. And Joel also has some paranormal experiences with an extra housemate living in his attic space during his college years. A big thank you to all our ratings and review givers on Apple and Spotify. Dekra, Mike Breezelove, It Could Be You, One, Haji Ho, April, Eric E. Lee, Chris Abraham, Miss Twisty, and finally 391AJJJ. Thank you all for taking a couple of minutes to leave a review for the podcast as it helps the show no end. And finally, the winners of the 2 free virtual tickets to the X Conference 2022, brought to you by the UnX Network, are John Schaefer and Holly King. Well done, guys. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Sloan, and welcome to the show.
Nice to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
It's great for you to come on today, and you're calling from Idaho.
Yes, sir.
Now, Sloan, you've going to be sharing a few experiences with us, starting with a cryptid sighting in 2004.
Yes.
And then you're going to follow with a UFO sighting. Would you like to begin there for us, please?
Yeah. So back in between 2003 and 2005, I served a mission for the LDS Church, and I was called to serve in Paraguay, the Asuncion Norte mission. And so I got down there in October of 2003, and in July of 2004 is kind of when I had this weird cryptid encounter. So it was July, which I'm in the northern hemisphere originally from and where I'm at currently. And so Paraguay is in the southern hemisphere. So since it was July, it was actually the winter time there. And I remember it being really cold, probably, you know, between 30 and 40 degrees Fahrenheit. So I needed to have a jacket on. I had a puffy jacket on. It was about 9 o'clock at night, and we were traveling home, and our house that we lived in, me and my missionary companion, was about three blocks straight in front of us down this dirt road. I'm not sure if you know too much about Paraguay, but Paraguay is kind of in the Amazon jungle, and so the road was all dirt, and then we were surrounded by just trees everywhere. And about halfway down the block, there was one light post, and it was on the right-hand side of the street. And so I kind of stopped because I saw a person standing under the light post. And the person had very, very dark skin, like darker than most Paraguayan people that I had ran into. Very dark and kind of dirty hair, like matted together hair that was not cut short. It was kind of long and a little bit longer and unkempt. Like it wasn't down to his shoulders, but it was like over the ears. And the weirdest part was, you know, it was so cold. This person was just wearing what looked to be really dirty, like small soccer shorts, like very like short. And it could have been a loincloth, but I just thought because of how high they were on the, like how much of this figure's thigh I could see, like that I thought that they were soccer shorts when I saw them. No shoes on, kind of dirty. Like I said, I was really cold, so the fact that this person was just wearing like these what I thought were soccer shorts, I was like, that's really weird. It was out of place. It was odd. And so I actually stopped where we were at, and we were at kind of like a crossroads. So it was where the street that we were traveling down that would go straight to our apartment, and our apartment or our house would be on the left-hand side. There was a cross street that was crossing there. And I turned to my companion, his name was Elder Velasquez. And I was like, I have a bad feeling. I don't think we should go down past that person. And I said it in Spanish. I didn't say it in English. Elder Velasquez was from Chile, and he was like, I feel the same way. We need to take a different way home. And so I was like, well, if we turn and go down a couple blocks to the right and then turn left and go like five or six blocks down past where our house would be and then turn left again, we'd come up on the house, so the house would be on the right-hand side. So it was kind of a very long, long way around. And he was like, yeah, let's do that. And so we turned to take a right down the street. He actually pulls out a little slingshot that he had. There's a lot of like stray dogs or just wild dogs that kind of live down there. They're street dogs. And a lot of times they attack missionaries. So he had a slingshot with like little metal pellets that he would use to get them from attacking us. And so he pulled that out. And as we turned and started walking up in the trees, up and back and to my left, over my left-hand shoulder, we started hearing this like very eerie whistling sound. And it wasn't like a normal whistle, like a whistling of a tune, but it also wasn't the wind whistling. It was kind of, I guess a good way to put it is like a combination of the both. It was just kind of this weird, eerie whistling. And the weirdest part was it stayed the same distance. Like it didn't matter how fast or slow, like if we slowed down to try and like see if there was anything up there, it kind of kept the same distance up and over my left-hand shoulder. So it was like going in the trees along the blocks that we were walking along. And so it was really creepy, very scary. We take the route that we had kind of planned out. We get to the house. The house has a locked gate. It has like a deadbolt. So Velasquez tossed me the keys to the deadbolt. I unlocked it. We can still hear the whistling. And then I toss him the deadbolt, so he's going to lock the gate behind me. We never entered the front door. We actually even put a bookcase in front of it because we didn't want to get robbed. So we always went around to the back. So I ran up and ran around to the back and unlocked the back door. And Velasquez came running around the house, came running into the back door. And as soon as we slammed the door shut and locked it, the whistling stopped. So that was the experience. It was a Wednesday night, I remember, because it happened 2 days. So every week we'd go to this, members of the church, this family would have a barbecue, and they'd invite the missionaries and invite all the people in the neighborhood that worked with them. They were pretty affluent in that area. And so that was on Friday nights. And so on that Friday night, we actually ended up going to this barbecue. And Velasquez was like, hey, tell them what happened Wednesday. And so I started telling this family kind of what had happened and how weird it was. And they start freaking out. They start being like, oh my gosh, you saw Palmetto. And I was like, Palmetto, I don't know what that is. And so they ended up getting me this book of Paraguayan myths and legends. And in that, whatever, the daughter actually opened it up for me. And she was like, read this. And so I started reading, and it was, he's kind of like a Bigfoot, like a cryptid type thing, like a legend that they have that he helps protect birds from like kids that throw rocks at birds or use slingshots at birds. He imitates the bird whistles. So if they like throw rocks or shoot slingshots at him, he'll then attack them. He is a dark skinned figure. He's short, usually shown as dirty. He drinks, supposedly if you want to appease him, he drinks this very strong alcoholic drink made out of sugarcane called caña and smokes cigarettes. So a lot of times you have to make him an offering of caña and cigarettes. So anyway, it was just kind of interesting because I had this experience not knowing anything about the myth or the legend of Palmetto. And then all of a sudden I have this experience, and then I find out about it 2 days later, and it kind of was, it was crazy. I was very religious at the time, so I kind of gave it a religious connotation. I was like, oh, it's, you know, the devil testing the missionaries type thing. But, you know, looking back at it now, I've kind of taken a step back from religion, and it now kind of has more of a, I see it through different eyes that like, oh, that's actually like a cryptid. That's something that I can't explain that, you know, I experienced, and it's probably something that other Paraguayans have experienced that then spawned that legend.
And you had never heard of this beforehand?
No, I didn't hear about it until, like I said, that Friday afterwards. And then it was like, you know, it kind of became an anecdote that I would share with new missionaries that were coming into the mission, you know, things like that. I don't generally share it like, you know, with people at work or anything like that, because I don't want people to think I'm crazy. But again, it was more of, you know, the Lord will protect you, you know, God will protect you if you are doing what's right. We didn't get attacked by this devil, this demon, because, you know, we followed those promptings that we weren't, you know, weren't supposed to go down that way, that sort of thing. So, but yeah, I had never heard of it actually before that Friday night when the familia Benegas, the Benegas family, gave me that book of myth and legends.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Other than whistling, did he make any other sounds?
No, so that's the other weird thing is I saw the person, and so I'm 5'9", which by American standards is not very tall, but the person, the figure that I saw that was under the lamppost was probably about 5'1" or 2", like a normal sized Paraguayan, right? Like I didn't see them as like, they weren't overtly big. The depictions that I saw of Palmetto after that, they have like as really tiny, right? Like they have them like 3 foot tall or something like that. And that's not necessarily, you know, I didn't see a 3 foot tall figure. I did see like a 5 foot tall, what I just thought a normal Paraguayan in really dirty, short soccer shorts, and not wearing a shirt, not wearing shoes, and really dark, dirty skin and kind of dark matted hair. So
yeah, he's got a few different names. He's also called, translated over to Hairy Feet, Lord of the Night, and Master of the Sun. Mm. Widespread, actually, southern Brazil, Argentina.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's a Guarani. So I not only learned to speak Spanish while I was down there, I also learned to speak Guarani. So it's like a Guarani myth or legend. And Guarani used to be spoke over most of South America, until the conquistadors came in, and it kind of got pushed back to where Guarani is now only spoken in like southern Bolivia, like western Brazil, and then like all of Paraguay and some northern Argentina, or even like areas that are basically surrounding Paraguay is where they may still speak it, but they speak it all of Paraguay. So, Che Anya Epaite La Guaranime, Ha Shembo Vu Apea. Like I just said, I speak Guarani, and it makes me really happy to speak Guarani. So, It was a Guarani myth or legend, so it doesn't surprise me that it was like over more of South America.
How long were you there for?
I was there for 2 years. So I started in the missionary training center, August of 2003. And then I got down into country, October of 2003. I was actually a missionary, like out in the field until January of 2005. And then from January till August of 2005, I was the financial secretary for the mission. So I was in charge of, you know, paying all the missionaries rent, making sure that, you know, reimbursements for travel, different things like that, making sure all the everything balanced, the budget's balanced and all that stuff. So I was actually in the mission field as a missionary from October of 2003 until January of 2005. And then it was kind of more of a like a 9-to-5 job from January of 2005 to August of 2005.
So it was an interesting place.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. It's kind of like it's so fertile. Birds will poo on like power lines, and because there's so much humidity and moisture in the air, plants will start growing on those power lines. Like that's how crazy fertile the Amazon forest is.
Absolutely. I looked on Wikipedia about this little fella, and it also says that he is said to capture particularly ungrateful girls.
Yes.
Force them to kiss him and later get a little bit amorous.
Yeah. I did read that as well in the Myths and Legends like book and later on in Wikipedia, but they said, you know, young girls who have babies out of wedlock, they used to claim were the children of Pombero. And so I didn't have anything like that happen to me. But yeah, that it's weird that there's like they attribute some things to him. But the things to me that stuck out was I saw that dark figure, shorter than me, about 5 foot tall, dark skin, dark, dirty, what I thought saga shorts, could have been a loincloth, not wearing any sort of protection from the cold. The eerie whistling that followed us all the way home. And it sounded like it was coming from up in the trees. It didn't sound like it was actually, like it wasn't following behind us. There was nobody on the streets with us. It was cold out. So most of the Paraguayans were, the only people out on the streets were the LDS missionaries. There wasn't the Paraguayans out because they were in keeping warm, right? So it was just me and Velasquez.
And it's ironic that your colleague had a slingshot and this little fella, he protects birds.
Yeah. And that was just another weird, like I said, when I started reading through that myth and legend, I was, wow, that would he have followed us if Velasquez hadn't pulled out a slingshot? It was just one of those, another thing that we had the experience, and is this experience similar to what other Paraguayans have had over the however many years they've had this myth or legend? And that's what they attribute it to. You know, I tried to rationalize it like, oh, was I just, you know, scared or different things like that? Or is it actually a cryptid? Do I believe in cryptids? Those sorts of things. I've had those thoughts. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is just a phenomenon that happens that they then attribute to Pombero. But maybe it is actually something that, you know, kind of like a Skinwalker Ranch. There's a weird thing that comes to our reality and has those weird interactions with people that spawned that myth or that legend.
It doesn't matter where in the world you go to, you know, there's always these little stories and myths and legends. And there's so many interesting ones. And I bet there's a lot more down that way as well. And I do have a lot of listeners actually in Paraguay. So if you're listening now and you've had an experience with a Pombero.
Pombero, yeah.
Pombero, get in touch. I'd like to hear more of encounters with this little guy. Okay, Sloan, would you like to move on to your UFO experience, please?
Yeah, so this one actually happened much more recently. So this happened in last year in September. So what happened was my wife and I had traveled from Pocatello, Idaho, down to Salt Lake City, Utah, because we had actually had our youngest two children were products of in vitro fertilization. And so the clinic that helped us bring our kids and complete our family was having like what they call a baby reunion. And that's where the doctors get to meet the kids that they've helped create and the families that they've impacted. So we had that baby reunion and we were then driving home from the baby reunion back up to Pocatello. So we were on the I-15. We had actually just gotten north of Salt Lake, and north of Salt Lake, there's actually the Hill Air Force Base, which is, I want to say something like 15 miles north of Salt Lake. I don't know exactly. But in between Salt Lake and the Hill Air Force Base, there's just these rocks, because it's in the Rocky Mountains, right? So there's the Wasatch Front that's like right along the 15. And on top of it, there was this dome that looked kind of like an observatory, right? So like for looking up at the sky, but there was no roads or anything to get up to that observatory. And so my wife was driving. I was in the passenger seat. My 10, almost 11-year-old at the time, he's now 11, was in the very back. And then my two younger ones were in the middle. And so I was looking up and I was talking to my wife, is that an observatory? What is that thing? And she's like, I don't know. That's really weird. It just kind of seems out of place, right? Because you have this beautiful like Rocky Mountain range and then just this kind of metallic looking white circular dome on top of a building. And so as we're sitting there, I see this kind of white disc object. We were traveling from south to north, so we were heading north, and it was like traveling kind of similar to us. It was going faster than us, but I started seeing it, and the observatory, well, I call it an observatory because at the time that's what I thought it was. Later when we got home, my wife looked it up, and it's actually one of the U.S.'s strategic radar installations that basically can see, I think, 500 miles in any direction from where it's at. And it uses magnetic pulses to do its radar array. So as I was looking up at the radar station, I saw this like white disc, and it looked like it was white, or it was like silver metallic reflecting the sunlight. The sun was still up because it was September. So, and it was about 4:30 in the afternoon, and it started going. I was like joking around. I was like, hey, wouldn't that be funny if that was a UFO? And because I listened to this podcast as well as other podcasts, and my wife's like, what are you talking about? And then I saw it go from like really bright. It started dimming, and then all of a sudden got really bright again. And so, holy crap, that might be a UFO. And my wife's like, what? What are you talking about? And she's trying to keep, you know, her eyes on the road. And she's going about 65 miles an hour. But she starts looking up. She's like, where? What are you talking about? And so I kind of described to her, there was, you know, most of it was dirt, but then there were some rocky portions of the mountain. I was right above that rocky portion, just south of the observatory. I was like, do you see the little like white dot? And she's like, oh my gosh, I see it. And then right when she said that, it started to dim again, and then it got really bright again. And it did that a couple times while she had eyes on it. And so she was like, holy crap, that's a UFO. So she kept her eyes back on the road because she couldn't keep her eyes on the thing, but I kept eyes on it. And while I was watching it, it all of a sudden went to, the best way to describe it is like Star Trek when they jump to light speed. Right, where they kind of stretch out and elongate. It went from like a disc shaped to like a straight line, and it was headed back south. And then I could snap my fingers and it just disappeared. Where did it go? Like it just disappeared. And then it did the opposite. And the opposite was, it was like a straight line. And then all of a sudden it shot back to where the straight line ended, and it was a disc again. And then I was like, it just reappeared. And I was kind of freaking out. At that point, my son was like, where is it, Dad? Where is it, Dad? My 11-year-old in the back. And at that point, it started actually circling kind of the domed part of the radar tower. And I was like, you see that disc that's circling the dome part of the radar tower? And it went in front of it, just north of it, and then went behind it and came back around. So it was like doing a circle where it would be in front of it and then behind it. He's like, oh my gosh, I see it. It just went behind it. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, and it just came out. And I was like, yep, that's what it is. So my son saw it as well. And then he was kind of freaking out. I was like, oh my gosh, I saw a UFO. And then the last thing I saw, it was horizontal. The disc shape was horizontal. And then it switched from horizontal to vertical. And then when it went vertical, all of a sudden it did the stretch thing that it had done before, but it shot straight up and then disappeared. And that was it. I was actually we were kind of in shock. My wife was, I thought I was like, am I crazy? And she's like, no, you're not crazy. I saw it too, but don't tell anybody you work with, because they'll think you're crazy. Right. And so you know, again, similar to experiences you have, you then have that self-doubt. It's like, well, maybe I was just seeing things. Maybe I was, you know, crazy. But the fact that my wife and my son saw it, that gave me more like, no, this is like a legitimate experience that we had had. Like I said, when we got home, she looked it up, and it was actually this place called Francis Peak. And it's just south of Hill Air Force Base, and it's a radar tower. And it's one of the strategic things, and it uses magnetic pulses. And I was just thinking to myself, and I don't know if this is the case, but if maybe the dimming and the, you know, going bright again was maybe the magnetic pulses bouncing off of whatever it was, because I can't explain the dimming and then the quick brightening of the object. So anyway, that was just a thought that I had after my wife figured out what that radar array was. She actually said, well, if we figure out what that thing is, maybe it would help answer questions. And then after she looked up, she's like, well, that leaves me with more questions. Like, what was it doing around our strategic, you know, radar? That's a great question. I have no idea. So
may well have been inquisitive what that dome was. And yeah, you're right. Yeah. It could well have been picking up, more than likely picking up the signal.
Yeah. Like I said, it was weird. I hadn't said the weird thing is talking about it. It gets me, I get excited and stuff again, because it was like, so I've never seen anything like it. It didn't move like a normal airplane. It didn't move like a bird. It didn't, like I said, I did actually did take out my phone and just start snapping pictures as we were doing it. But then I went back through the roll, and you could barely even see the radar dome that was on there. Even though in my eyes, I could actually see it really well. I could see it from several miles away, because I could see it when it first was kind of ahead of us. And then we saw the thing flying up to it, flying around it, you know, doing all of that. And it was, instead of being out in front of the windscreen where we first saw the dome, by the time we had seen the UFO, out my passenger window. And that's actually where my son saw it from, the back seat. So that was another thing, because I was thinking, oh, maybe it was a reflection of something, right, in the car. But that wouldn't explain it going in front of and behind the dome. And also it wouldn't explain my son seeing it from a completely different window, you know, where he saw it in the back seat. So I, you know, again, you go through your mind trying to rationalize like what you saw. And I don't think there was anything that I could explain it, you know, and I have no idea what it was. I haven't seen anything move like it before or since. And then, you know, the fact that it was near a U.S. Air Force base, Hill Air Force Base was just past that. And it was at a U.S. Air Force radar station. You know, those things go to mind. Well, could it be Artec? Maybe. But it's not something, it's not like a normal plane that I've ever seen or anything like that. So, but yeah, it's something the first time I've ever seen anything like that. And it was witnessed. If it was just myself, I probably would have kept it to myself. But since it was my wife and my 10-year-old son saw it, that gave me more confidence that I wasn't crazy.
Going home and saying, guess what I saw? And they're like, yeah, okay. But at least, you know, they all saw it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty, like I said, it's weird because I tell that story. And like I said, I found myself getting just as excited, or just as, I don't know. I don't know what to call it, because it's not like excited, but it's also not like I wasn't, oh, yay, I get to see this. It was more like, what the heck is that? What is that? I've never seen anything like that. But I wasn't really scared, but I was just, holy crap. I guess awestruck would be probably a better descriptor, just awestruck by it.
And especially as, you know, it shot off at lightning speed only to then return. The exactly same place.
Yep. And like I said, it went south when it did that. And the weirdest part was the stretch, right? Like, so it looked like it stretched into a straight line. And again, the only thing that I've ever seen that somewhat resembles that is when Star Trek, they jump into light speed, right? They stretch and then all of a sudden they disappear. That's exactly what it looked like. That's the best way to describe what it looks like.
And when it came back, was it in exactly the same position?
Yes. And like I said, it was an opposite. So it went from a straight line to where the line ended. And then all of a sudden the rest of it caught up, it seemed like, and then boom, it was right there. It was the disc again. And then when it took off vertical, it basically did the same thing where it stretched and then boom, disappeared vertically after circling the T tower a couple of times.
I don't know anything man-made that is able to move like that. How many times did she circle the tower?
Twice. While me and my son had eyes on it, it went around it two times.
And I wonder if they actually even picked it up themselves, you know, them at the radar.
Yeah. The weird thing is I actually then, you know, when my wife was Googling what that was, that Francis Peak, we also Googled, like, had anybody else seen UFO sightings there? And I found one on Reddit, I think, and it was back in 2011, and they had seen one at Francis Peak, and they said it was a white disc. They saw it at about the same time, and it was a different time of the year, but they said the sun was up. So the sun was still up by the time when we saw it. But yeah, that 2011 sighting, I was like, that's what we saw too. That's really interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting if someone else has seen it. And did you get a chance to report it?
I didn't know where to report it. I didn't know. I mean, I guess MUFON, but I didn't really have pictures. Yeah, I haven't reported it anywhere officially.
It might be worth doing whenever you get a chance. I know you're going to be busy moving soon.
Yeah.
But even just a National UFO Reporting Center is always worth it, because you never know, if someone else has seen it, then they might be doing the same as you did, checking, you know, see if there's any other sightings. So it might also help them if someone else has seen it, because that would then be at least three people.
Multiple data points or something, yeah.
Yeah, sure. You should have tried to contact them, see if they would have told you anything. They probably wouldn't. We didn't pick anything up.
Yeah, that's the really intriguing part, because it's a radar array, right? So they would have had radar, and it's Hill Air Force Base. But, I mean, the Air Force has been pretty quiet on that front. But it would be interesting to see, because I can get the date. It was a Saturday, and it was like the 18th or something like that of September. I just have to look it up. But so I know the date. I know the approximate time. I mean, it would be interesting if somebody from the Air Force actually, you know, could look and see if they caught anything on their radar there at that Francis Peak.
Yeah, if it was directly outside of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they probably wouldn't share that kind of information in any case. Wonderful. Good stuff.
I actually like yours because it's more people who've had experiences, right? And so it's good for people who've seen things and experienced things that, you know, when I've been listening to your show, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy, even though sometimes I feel that way when I actually have my 9-to-5 job. It's nice knowing that there are sane people out there who have those 9-to-5 jobs that actually still do encounter these things and don't know how to, you know, deal with them, don't know how to, yeah, just like having a place where they can go and share kind of what they've experienced, and knowing that there's others out there. I think that's really helpful. So I appreciate what you're doing.
Thanks, man. And yeah, a lot of people out there, you know, all share very similar experiences. And obviously you got a unique one that you had down in South America.
Yeah. But it's weird. So that one, like I said, it was a religious context, right? Like that's how I compartmentalized it in my head, right? It was religious, the demons, the devil was trying to get me, but I follow the spirit. And it wasn't until I took a step back that I was like, oh no, that's actually like a weird experience. I also, after my brother Scott passed away, I actually had an out of body experience, which was interesting because, I listened to that audiobook, Alien Interview, which I'm pretty sure is fictionalized, but there's a part of it where the alien that supposedly crashed in Area 51, like tells the nurse to, you know, get out of her body and her consciousness, kind of, she was floating above herself and stuff like that. And it really spoke to me because that's kind of what I had experienced after my brother passed away. And it was, it was very interesting because in my life, I had always put that in a religious context as well, right? I compartmentalized that as here's a spiritual thing, but it's not until, like I said, I took a step back that I'm like, no, that's actually more of like an out of body experience. That's more of a something other experiencers have also experienced. So it's kind of interesting that like, it's usually not just one, it's usually multiple things. And then how I had compartmentalized that due to my religious paradigm. Right.
You know, when you look at people all over the world in different religions and stuff, have these experiences, and they do, because I do have religious people on here. It's not always evident, but so you make yourself wonder, you know, say if you're Catholic and you're having experiences with the, say, the Virgin Mary on the peak and like,
yeah,
then you can understand how religion personally would affect someone's encounter. I mean, but yours, you know, you, even though you did think it was negative and probably that, you know, the devil, which you'd expect, to be honest with you, you know, what you saw is what you saw. It wasn't masquerading as anything, if you see what I mean. Whereas someone is having like an angelic experience, it could well be aliens, you know, you don't know. But because they're so religiously ingrained, you know, they're seeing angels. But whereas what you saw seems to be exactly what you saw.
Yeah, it didn't seem to be anything, like I said, it didn't feel supernatural. When I first saw that, what I thought was a very dark-skinned, dirty Paraguayan, I actually thought I was going to get mugged. Like, that was my first instinct. And that's what I actually, because I was mugged when I was down there sometimes, you know, like, that was my first instinct. It wasn't like, oh, this is something supernatural, right? The supernatural part, the weird, eerie part, was when the whistling started up and above me over my left shoulder that then followed us. That's when it started to get weird. But when I first saw the figure, I just thought, oh, that's somebody who looks like they're kind of ominous, where the lights, they were standing in the light to where there was like shadow casting on their face type thing, because they were standing directly under the street light. And I just thought, oh, that person's going to mug us if we walk down that way. That was what I thought, right? So I didn't think, oh, this is going to be supernatural. It wasn't until the other stuff started happening that I was like, this is really freaky.
When he started whistling, was there any particular tune to the whistling?
So that's the weird thing. It wasn't whistling a tune. It was an eerie whistle. And it wasn't like the wind whistling, because the wind whistles down there through the, like the trees. And I'd heard that before. It was kind of, it sounded like, what's the best way to put it? I don't know what, maybe a bird, but a hurt bird, I guess would be some way to put it. Like kind of an eerie hurt bird, I guess would be probably a good way to describe it.
If he's trying to guide people in, you know, if they're say hunting birds and he's there to protect the birds, you would do a sound of an injured animal, because then that's going to attract predator or the person, isn't it? So it kind of makes sense that it was kind of making that sound.
Yeah. Like I said, it was eerie. It didn't sound like they were, you know, whistling Dixie, right? There wasn't an actual like tune to it. And so, yeah, it was just an eerie, eerie whistle.
I like it. It's a unique one. It's the first time I've had one of these. So yeah, good stuff, man.
Thanks. Like I said, yeah, I think you're doing a great service in giving people a platform to share their experiences. And then the listeners, it gives them that comfort that, hey, I'm not alone and I'm not crazy. Right. So you're doing great work. I appreciate it. So keep it up.
Sloan, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners today.
You're absolutely welcome. It's been my pleasure. Appreciate you.
Yeah, that's great, Sloan. You take care of yourself and I'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. Good afternoon, Joel, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Nick, from Northwest Montana and Glacier National Park. I'm glad to meet you in person and be a guest. I'm very honored. Thank you.
And you are more than welcome. It's great to have you on today. You have a couple of encounters to share with us. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please, sir?
Sure. I'll throw one extra in that I didn't include in my email to you. It was less significant than the main story that I'll talk about, but I did have one sighting in Montana. I've been here about 7 years, And I was in the hot tub with my then girlfriend in the backyard. And it was about 1, maybe even 2 o'clock in the morning, very quiet, clear night, clear skies. And we lived about six, seven miles from the main airport, Glacier International Airport. So we're used to the flight paths and seeing lights, you know, at most hours of the day and night. But we noticed when we were sitting in the hot tub, just off to our south, I was facing directly south. My girlfriend was facing east and looking south. And two bright lights appeared. And I thought, for a few seconds, I thought this must be an airplane turning. It had more of a glow than an airplane and looked a lot brighter than airplane lights. But I thought, well, maybe it's reflecting off the clouds or some mist in the air that we can't see. It was probably 2 miles away, I would guess. But the lights just stayed there. And I was staring at it. And I said to my girlfriend, I said, do you see this? And she said, yeah. And so we looked and I thought, well, maybe it was a refracted stars, or I still wasn't sure. And then the already bright lights became very, very bright. So they pulsed like they were juicing up some electrical energy or photons or whatever, and pulsed very brightly and then streaked off at a speed that's not comprehensible. I mean, certainly nothing that I've ever seen in the air has gone that fast. So that was an interesting little sighting. But prior to that, the only other experience I had was, it was either 1980 or 1981. So best I can recall, I was about 12, maybe 13 years old. And I was camping with my father and my brother in Williamsburg, Virginia. We would camp there almost every summer. There was an amusement park in Williamsburg, Busch Gardens. It's still there. So we would go there for a couple days and camp for a few nights. So we were staying actually in Jamestown, which is just one town over, one of the very first settlements in America, actually. And so we were staying on the James River in a campground. And earlier in the afternoon, they had a dock and a river there, and you could jump in and swim. And you know how the docks have sort of these loose pieces of wood. And like an idiot, because I was 12, I was like shuffling along with my feet. Like, so I wasn't lifting up my feet, and I was just kind of walking without lifting my foot. Well, that's not a good idea on a dock. And I wound up with like almost a 1-inch piece of wood stuck about 1 inch or 2 into the bottom of my foot, which was quite painful. So my father tried to get it out, and I was screaming and yelling, and you know, it was really in there pretty deep. So he said, okay, well, we're going to go to the hospital and they'll pull it out. And they did what my dad was trying to do. They just laid me down on the bed and said, okay, clench your fists, hold on to this, bite this, and we're gonna yank this out, which they did. So they dressed my wound, patched me up, sent me back to the campground, but didn't give me any kind of medicine or painkillers or anything. So we, you know, had our dinner and our campfire and all that evening. And then my brother and my father, you know, when you camp, once it gets dark, you usually just go to bed. You just sort of get tired naturally. So all three of us, after we'd had dinner and a little bit of a fire, we went into our tent, which was like a 4-man tent. And my brother and my father fell asleep pretty quickly. And everybody in my family has allergies, and we all snore. So my brother has asthma, and it was hot and it was humid, and they were being very loud, and I just couldn't get to sleep between the noise they were making and you know, the discomfort with my wound that I had incurred earlier in the day. So I decided to just go out into the van and just sit in the van. It was overlooking the river there and the other campsites, and it was sort of patchy trees, and so, but you could look up through the pine trees and you could see the stars, and it was very pretty. So I thought, well, I'll just sit out here till I'm tired enough, or maybe I'll just fall asleep in the captain's chair in the front of the van. And I really wasn't out there very long. I would say maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And I looked out across the river and I could see a yellow light, almost exactly like the color of, you know, the midday sun, that color yellow. And it looked very pretty small because it was probably 150 to 200 yards away. So a little further than like a football field away from me on the other side of the river. But it was zipping around through the trees and it looked like it was kind of dodging the trees and just sort of zooming around and heading kind of further away from me. But then I noticed there was a second one just off to my left that was quite a bit closer, probably 75 yards away or so. And this one I could get a better look at, and it was a perfectly contained yellow orb, probably 2 feet in diameter, maybe a little bit bigger, maybe 2.5 feet. And I'm thinking, what the heck is this thing? You know, and it was hot and humid and muggy. And I thought, well, maybe this is swamp gas because, you know, the only thing I'd really heard about UFOs was, you know, that crazy people saw them and they were just mistaken for other things. And a real common one was swamp gas. And I thought, well, okay, maybe this is swamp gas. But it was moving very quickly and it was moving towards me once I noticed it. So it came closer and closer within this like 5 second period where I was trying to figure out what I was looking at. And I thought, this thing's coming right at me. It is headed my way as it sort of dodged the trees and zipped along the shoreline of the river. So the only thing I could think to do was to roll up my window because I thought, well, I don't want it coming in the van with me. So I rolled up my window and it continued to come at me. This is all over just a few seconds. And it zipped right in front of me, about 3 feet away from the van, right in front of me, right at eye level. So I got it was moving fast, but I still got a really good look at it. And like I said, it was a perfectly round, luminous orb. It didn't look like there was anything inside it. It didn't seem to glow. So the light seemed to be contained within itself. So it wasn't lighting up the surrounding trees or the road or the path or anything. And it zipped off to my right, right in front of me, and continued to dodge the trees and went off to my right where I lost it. I couldn't see it. It went so far into the woods that I couldn't see it anymore. Then I noticed a third orb that could have been the first one I saw because it was in the same area that was a couple hundred yards away. And I noticed now there's three of them going. So two in the distance and the one off to my right that disappeared. So there, I know that there's at least three of these things zipping around. And I'm just trying to make sense of it. I'm trying to come up with a good explanation and I can't. I know there's a naval base about 30 miles south where we're staying, but I don't think the Navy had this kind of stuff in 1980, much less 2022. So, you know, I sort of resolved myself to think, well, this is a true UFO. I don't know what this is. Then I looked up into the stars, up through the trees, and I noticed a giant yellow orb, and it was like the size of the sun. And much like the orbs that went right in front of me, it didn't seem to glow at all. It didn't light up the night or anything. It was impossible to tell how far away it was, but it was probably at least a couple miles away. But I didn't see it come in. It was just there when I looked up. And so I'm staring at this thing going, well, what is this? Maybe this has something to do with what I saw. And then four orbs that must have been the ones that were zipping around by the river. 1, 2, 3, 4, they go straight up in the air. I see them leave the campground area and they go right up to the larger orb in the sky. And it just kind of absorbed them. It wasn't like they were docking or anything. They just went into it. And I thought, okay, this is something here. And so I'm just staring at the big orb after it absorbed the other four. And it did not take off. It did not go up or sideways. It just blinked off. And that was it. It was gone. And to this day, I still don't know what that was. But it seemed like it was a probe. That's the impression that I got. It was like scientists that were checking out, you know, the flora and the fauna or whatever via these devices or these orbs. And I had not had any other, you know, prior to that, I didn't know if I believed in UFOs or didn't believe in UFOs or believed in aliens or not. I don't know. I didn't really think about it. I mean, I had seen, like, I think a couple years before that, Close Encounters had come out. So that was like my first exposure to anything like that. And, you know, I did read science fiction books and stuff, but I didn't really have an opinion on that. And anybody that sort of brought up UFOs sort of was just made fun of. And, you know, it was just this drunk country bumpkin down a lonely road and he was by himself. And they're just made up stories. Whenever there was a news program or, you know, a segment on the news about a sighting, you know, they always played like the mysterious music and they talked about little green men. So it was in 1980, if you told your UFO story to most people, you just got made fun of. And that's exactly, and I don't blame my father and my brother for this, but, you know, once I felt safe and this event was over, of course, I get out of the van and run into the tent and I wake up my dad, wake up my brother. I said, I saw a UFO. And I described the whole thing and they just started laughing at me. And my father even said, oh, that was, you know, that was swamp gas. And he was born in like the late 40s or mid 40s. So, you know, he grew up hearing that excuse as well. So that's the first thing that came to his mind was, well, it must be swamp gas. But with the invention of the internet and lots of videos and stuff like that, once the internet was up and running, you know, I said, I'm gonna really check out what swamp gas is. And, you know, I found some videos and this was definitely not swamp gas. I don't know what it was, but I can tell you for sure it was not swamp gas. So that's my UFO story.
Yeah, I mean, that's what used to happen. You know, these experiences were passed off as swamp gas.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that whatever I saw was anything, but it had to be one of two things. It had to be technology from another civilization that does not live on this planet, or technology from a civilization that lives on this planet that we don't know anything about. It's just one of those two things. Because just the way everything moved, the way the orbs moved, it was very obvious that it was intelligent and that it was, you know, not running into the trees, it was zipping around them, you know, and then to accelerate into the sky at that rate of speed and disappear into this larger orb. I mean, that's not something we have, or China has, or Russia has. I guess we can't know that for sure. There's plenty of black programs, and a lot of times, you know, we find out about these things after the fact, but this is 1980. There's no way. There's just no way we were that advanced at this point.
Yeah, and these orbs, they always seem to get reported around bodies of water and large wooded areas. And yeah, I mean, some graph doesn't zip in and zip out of trees and then up into the sky. So that's an interesting one. So you're right. It could well be like an expedition, maybe looking around, evaluating the place.
Yeah, I mean, that's the impression I got. You know, I thought of just as we were talking about, I kind of thought of like, you know, E.T. the extraterrestrial, when he comes, you know, he wants to collect all the plants and, you know, see what life on another planet is like. And, you know, I have no way of proving any of this, but that's just what my intuition told me. That's what I was seeing. I was seeing some kind of expedition to explore what, you know, this abundant life on this planet is like. And another just feeling I get from all this is that I think that the Earth, while there are, you know, trillions of stars and billions of galaxies, I think that the Earth is maybe not entirely unique, but it is probably rare to have this much diversity of life on a planet. You know, I think there's life everywhere, and it can develop, you know, in many different ways. But I think that we're a little bit special, and maybe that's what part of this interest, you know, from these scientists from wherever, you know, lies. I don't know. That's just a feeling I have.
agree with you there. And that's something humans do, you know, human beings, they go around and take samples and stuff. And I'm sure we are relatively special. I wouldn't say Earth is a success story. but as far as life goes, I'd imagine, you know, yeah, we are probably quite special in the universe.
Yeah, I think Earth is a success story, but humanity is another story.
that's a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, I think we're going through some really tough stuff here coming up. I think kind of for the beginning of the pandemic, I got sort of the feeling that there really is a shift going on. And I mean, we can relate this to UFOs too, because like I was telling you my story, how everybody used to make fun of you. Well, now the government says this is real. We don't know what it is. It's not our technology. You know, so we're getting into a safer space to talk about these things, which is probably what prompted me to send you an email in the first place. You know, not that I fear the ridicule. I don't care. I know what I saw, but I wouldn't really tell the story. You know, unless somebody asked about it, I wouldn't volunteer the information over the past few decades until recently. And I'm like, well, I wrote it down when I was a little kid and just kept it to make sure that I remembered everything right. And 40 years later, that's what happened.
You're absolutely right. You know, a lot of people are coming out because of the way the government have said, you know, these things are real and we don't know what they are. I'm not entirely sure they're being 100% truthful, but it is a start, and it is little stepping stones, but it is a move in the right direction.
Yeah, I think we know now exactly what they want us to know, and that there certainly is more to this story. And you know, the government likes to put everything into compartments on a need to know basis. So I think if you strung all the information together, we'd have a whole much bigger picture of what's going on. But I think some people know some things and some other people know some other things. And I think it's going to unravel. And I hope in our lifetime, I've often thought, what's the first thing I'm going to ask, you know, when I die, to the beings of light or wherever we go? And the first thing I want to know about is UFOs. Like, what the heck is this? You know, so I'd rather find out in the flesh.
Right. Sure. Yeah. No, in advance.
Yeah.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
What's wonderful, Joe. Do you want to move on to your paranormal encounter, please?
Sure. So about 8 years later, after my UFO incident, I was in college. I went to West Virginia University in Morgantown, West Virginia. And I stayed in the dorms the first year. And then the second year, I rented a house with two mates that I knew from school. So we had a big yellow house facing a bridge right across a river. And there was an apartment in the bottom where two other guys stayed that we didn't really know. And then we rented the second floor, which had three bedrooms and a bathroom and a kitchen. And then it also had an attic, which was smaller than the rest of the house. It was like a sloped roof, you know, kind of small, one big room up there with a utility closet in there. So one of my roommates was a drummer. He kept his drum kit up there. And we had a couch and an old black and white TV. I'm that old. And so we moved in, and about a week into living there, we would notice that we'd hear these footsteps above us, what sounded like they were coming from the attic. And they weren't very loud, but they distinctly sounded like footsteps. You know, so we would hear it and we'd go up there and we wouldn't see anything. We didn't hear anything else when we went up there, and we'd go back down. And we repeated this for a couple weeks. And then we kind of thought, well, maybe it's an old house, probably a 100-year-old house. And maybe the guys that live on the bottom floor you know, or walking around at 2-3 in the morning. It was always 2-3 in the morning when we hear the footsteps. We thought, well, maybe these guys are walking around down there. It's an old house and it's like triggering the floorboards, you know, there's some kind of vibration or connection there where it's making it sound like when they're walking downstairs, they're making it sound like they're walking in the attic. So we kind of thought, okay, well, we're going to roll with that and just not worry about it. But as the weeks went on, the encounters grew louder and louder and louder. And by a couple months in, it sounded like someone wearing combat boots was stomping as hard as they could around the attic. And at this point, we stopped going up to check because at this point, all three of us were pretty convinced that, you know, something was up there and we didn't know who or what it was. And we were not interested in finding out really. So we sort of kind of got used to that too, you know, this stomping around, and we'd make jokes about, oh, our ghost is walking around again. He'll go to bed soon. And then it would stop and that was it. So one night around 3 a.m, my roommate David and I were in the kitchen. We had a little table in there and we like to play chess. So we were playing chess and we heard the stomping and we were making jokes about it. Ha ha, the ghost is out again. But then we started to hear the sounds of Steve, my other roommate's drum set. So it sounded like someone was taking a finger and like flicking it on the snare drum, and then it would like tap the cymbal. And we're like, what the hell? Now he's now he's playing the drums, huh? And the stomping continued, and we just sort of froze our game of chess, and we just were listening and stomping. And the staircase that came down from the attic ended in an archway that was right next to the kitchen archway. So we couldn't see the bottom of the stairs from where we were sitting, but it was right next to us. It was literally a few feet away. So this thing is stomping around up there. And all of a sudden we just hear boom, 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 straight down the steps, very clear that's what we heard. It wasn't the steps downstairs. It was right there. And I wish I had a picture of our faces when that happened, because we were truly, truly terrified. And we, you know, I said to David, I said, I'm not going out there. And he's like, well, I'm not going out there. I'm like, well, I guess we'll just sit here. So we sat there for a long time. I mean, it seemed like a long time. It was probably 20 minutes or so. And we didn't hear anything else the rest of that night, you know. So round about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, we wandered off to bed and just went to sleep, and that was it. And that only happened once. But I don't know what it was. Well, I'll tell you why I say he, because the story doesn't quite end there. So I don't know how much later this happened, but maybe a month or two later. I was alone in the house, and the only TV we had was up in the attic. And, you know, this thing had never harmed us or threatened us or, you know, talked to us or whatever. So, you know, I was not too afraid to just be up in the attic by myself. It was in the back of my mind, but I'm like, I'm going to live my life. I don't know what this thing is, but I'm just going to go on here. So I was watching TV and I got really sleepy, and we had like a mattress below the couch on the floor there. And I thought, I'm just going to fall asleep up here. I'm too lazy to get up and go to bed. And so I laid down and I closed my eyes, and I was definitely awake. I've gone over this again and again, but I was definitely not asleep or dreaming or anything like that. Like it was a fluid moment from laying down, closing my eyes, and then getting this intense cold feeling the whole room. And I could feel it coming from my right side. I could feel this coldness just kind of envelop me. And remember, this is an attic and it was warm up there. Even if it was cold outside, the attic was always the warmest part of the house, you know, and it was a warm night anyway. So the coldness was just not explainable. There wasn't anything in the room or, you know, equipment or, you know, there's nothing. We didn't have an air conditioner up there. It just got very cold, and it felt like a void would be would be the way I would describe the emotion that came with the coldness. It was a sadness, you know, like something is missing, you know, like an incomplete feeling of some sort. And I got pretty creeped out. I mean, I got goosebumps. I'm on my arm. I'm getting goosebumps now talking about it. But I just sort of froze there and laid there for a second. And in my right ear, very distinctly, I heard a man's voice say, "Peter." That's the only word he said. He said, "Peter." And I didn't know if he thought I was Peter or he was talking about Peter. I don't know who Peter was or is, but that set me off. I was like, all right. And I leapt up and I took off. I was in pajama pants and I was barefoot. And I ran straight down the steps, right out the side door, and ran up the street to my girlfriend's house and stayed there the rest of the night. But other than that, just the stomping continued after that. And to this day, still don't have, you know, any kind of explanation for that.
Yeah, that account is very relatable. I think a lot of people in the same situation, alone in an attic, and something speaks into your ear, I think a lot of people will be gone.
Yeah, it was kind of like classic horror movie or something, you know. I'll never forget that. And I, you know, I've not had any other experiences like that since then. So it's been, you know, it's been decades since, you know, and at this point I'm getting older and I care less about everything. I don't know how to explain that, but I am welcoming it now. Like, I'm like, okay, show me a gray, an alien, a UFO, a ghost. I don't care. I want to know what this is. But, you know, despite my welcoming attitude towards it, you know, I'm in my 50s now, and that was in my early 20s, and I haven't had any experiences since then.
Maybe you want to get yourself on a ghost hunt or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Get that adrenaline going.
Yeah, well, that's about it. I do have one other little added piece if you want me to throw this in, and this is something I have never told anybody. It's just so bizarre that in my own mind, I tried to justify it as a hallucination or a dream or whatever, but I've gone over it hundreds of times in my head, and it really did happen, and it was at the same house. This is post-ghost experience. I was coming home. It was about twilight, and I was coming home from class and walking across the bridge that went over this river. The house was right there. And I noticed right at the curve in the road in front of our house, there was a cat that had been hit by a car, and it was clearly dead, but it was still in the road, and it just made me feel bad. And so I thought, well, I'm gonna at least get it off the road, you know, so someone doesn't run over it again. So I ran up to the attic, and there was a little utility closet in there. And there was like rags and paint and stuff like that. And I thought, well, I'm going to grab an old rag out of the closet up here. And when I did, that same cold thing happened again. And it was warm. And when I opened that closet, it was freezing cold. So it made me think the guy, that was kind of his hangout. That's sort of where he started from. But nonetheless, I just grabbed a rag, closed the door, got out of there again. And I went out to the road, and I picked up the cat with the rag, and I, you know, put him off to the side of the road on the side of the sidewalk there. And it was almost dark, sort of getting dark, but not quite all the way dark. And there, I was standing on this corner that looked down the ravine that went down to the river, and it probably dropped off like 300 or 400 feet. And I noticed a glow in the brush there. That was very unnatural looking. So I walked closer so I could look down the ravine, and I saw a full-bodied apparition of a woman. And I mean, it was like right out of a ghost story or, you know, a movie, floating in the air, big smile on her face, definitely luminous, sort of had on like flowing robes that almost looked like tattered rags. And she laughed at me, and she just floated down into the ravine where I could have no longer see her. So that was my only other experience, but that was just shortly after the ghost in the attic there.
What happens to cat?
I don't know. It was gone the next day. you know, I don't know if animal control came along and picked it up or their owner found it or whatever, but it was not there the next day, because that's the first thing I did. In college, you stay up till 3-4 in the morning. This is by noon the next day, it was gone by the time I'd gotten up. So I'm not sure.
That's really strange that she laughed at you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, if she had any sense of what I was feeling, which I kind of got the impression she did, I was like, what the hell am I looking at here? And this is a full-blown apparition. This isn't footsteps in the attic or, you know, a creaking door. This is a full-bodied, large person glowing and floating above, you know, above the shrubs down to the river, you know. And so, and she just turned her head and laughed. I don't remember if I heard the laugh or I just saw the laugh. I'm not quite sure on that. But, you know, she sort of threw her head back after she looked at me and, you know, almost like in a cackle and as if to say, ha, you saw me, you caught me.
It is very strange. You know, you had the cat and then you went to the cupboard to retrieve the rags and then you felt Peter in the closet and then you come out and then see this lady by the ravine.
Yeah, and the death of the cat, it did seem interrelated in a way that I couldn't really put together even to this day. I'm not quite sure, but it's almost like, you know, you're sort of looking through the veil at all the things we can't see normally. I don't know. That's just a feeling that I had then.
Could be right. What color was the cat?
It was white and had like brown spots.
Okay, so not black then.
It was not a black cat.
Not a black cat.
Yeah, I'm ready for another one. I'll let you know. It's been 40 years, but I'm willing.
You know, I do get a lot of people on here which have experiences, and sometimes it's because they have welcomed it. You know, they've welcomed the experience. They're not always so happy after it happens, mind, because it kind of gets them off guard, but it does, you know, it does happen. You know, people put these thoughts out into the ether and things happen.
Yeah, I think we do create our own reality. I mean, I think we're proving that with, you know, new sciences now with consciousness and quantum mechanics and all that. So I'll continue to do that. And my, you know, as I age, I think my mind is actually becoming more open. So I actually expect something else to happen like this, but I don't know when or where or what. But hey, maybe it'll be in England. I'm coming to England next year. I'm going to walk from Kingsbridge, you know, way down south there, and walk from Kingsbridge up to all through the whole country and to Berwick upon Tweed.
Okay. That's wow. Are you doing that for charity?
Not sure yet. It was an inspiration from a book I read by an English author, Rachel Joyce, about a man who goes on a kind of an accidental pilgrimage. And it was my favorite novel that I've ever read. And it was actually her first novel, which is amazing. So I kind of want to recreate what this character Harold did in the book and sort of go town to town and sort of follow in Harold's footsteps and see what happens. Probably take a couple months. It's about 530 miles, something like that.
But yeah, you'd love it. You know, you're going to go through some great, great towns.
Yeah, I'm going to go through Stroud and Exeter. And where was Shakespeare from?
He was from Stratford-upon-Avon.
Yes. Yep. Through there. And then, you know, it kind of gets more remote in the like last third of the trek there as you go up. I think it's called Wooler.
Right.
Way up there. And
did you say Stroud?
Yes, I'm going right through Stroud.
In Gloucestershire?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm actually not far from that. I'm actually in Gloucester.
Oh.
I lived in Stroud many, many years ago, back in the 90s.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe I'll stop and see you, Nick.
Maybe you should, yeah. Let us know when you're passing. I'll meet you along the route.
Yeah. Really looking forward to it. I hope to do it a year from now if I can raise enough funds. But I'm kind of looking for sponsors and, you know, tie it into a charity. And I've actually gotten a hold of the author of the book, and she knows about what I'm doing. And, you know, they're filming a movie of the book right now as we speak. And so she kind of trying to tie my walk in with that, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that is a wonderful idea.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll make it. I'm going to try, but I'm 50. Well, I'll be 55 by then, but I live near Glacier Park. I do a lot of hiking, so I'm used to lots of day hikes, but that's more like, you know, 8 to 12 miles, not 500. So.
Wonderful. Joel, I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing that for our listeners.
I really love your show, Nick. And the best part of it is it's just honest and clean, and there's no X-Files music playing. It's just people talking. And, you know, I became obsessed with UFOs after my, you know, when I was a kid after that. And I've seen it all. I've read it all. And there's so much sensationalism around it, and you really dial that back. There's only like a couple researchers that I feel fall into. I think Richard Dolan is another researcher that really does a good job of just keeping a level head and not sensationalizing everything. And you do much the same kind of work. So I really appreciate it. And I think it's important.
It is important to do it that way. And you're absolutely right. That's exactly what happens.
Your show does not have an agenda. And that's the best part about it. It's just, here's what happened. That's it. Well, keep up the good work, Nick. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I promote your show on my own Facebook page. I have a pretty big following. And, you know, I just like to see it continue to grow.
No problem. Great talking to you, man.
All right.
Bye-bye. Okay. Thank you, Joel. That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. And while you're on the website, be sure to check out the podcast store for Chronicles t-shirts, mugs, and other goodies. A very special thank you to Sloan and Joel for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.